So it's interesting here. He's asking here, he's saying, are you morose? Are you upset? Are you depressed because you couldn't keep your promise to someone? That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, there, Arjun comes back and he's depressed. There's so many things. There's so many reasons he could have been depressed, right? So many reasons. And here, Yudhisthira says, did you keep a promise? Did you make a promise you couldn't keep? So that's interesting. That means that at least amongst the Kshatriyas, it was a big, how should we say, I don't want to use the word fall down, but for lack of a better word at this moment in time, I'll use it, for them not to keep a promise. You could say that was their code of ethics or principle, the principle of a Kshatriya, that he'd always keep his word. So that's a nice example for us to follow, to have that Kshatriya spirit, you know, to keep the word. Okay, here's another story. Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni promised his wife a benediction. He said, I'll give you any benediction you want. And the benediction was, she asked for a son who would kill Indra. Can you imagine? You offer your wife a benediction. She waits. And then one day she says, okay, I'm asking for the benediction. Give me a son. And because he's a mystic yogi, he could do that. Give me a son who will kill Indra. Indra's a demigod. You don't want to have a son who will kill Indra. Right? So, he's thinking now. I promised her. So he wasn't thinking how to get out of the promise. He's thinking, I can't get out of the promise because I promised her, even something that bad. I promised to give her a benediction and the promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. So he came up with a solution. But the point is, he kept his promise. Same thing in the next story, Dasarath, Ramayan. You probably, many of you know this story. Dasarath was fighting. And I believe the story goes he was wounded and his wife saved his life and then he offered her a benediction. And then she said, what did she say? Who knows? Out there in Krishna.com land, what did she say? Dasarath offered that, say, I'll give you any benediction or boon. Then what did she say? Does anybody know? Any of you know out there what she said? Or should I tell you? She said, I'll ask later. Not now. So, what did she ask? Something very dreadful. It was the night before the coronation of Ram. Prince Ram was going to be the king, coronated the king. Now, that night, she went to her husband and said, yes, you remember? You gave me a benediction and I told you I would ask for it later. He said, yes, please ask. He said, banish Ram to the forest and make my son the king. Because he had many wives, so her birth son, she wanted him to be the king. Could you imagine how devastating that was to Dasarath? I don't know if you could imagine. It was like, you know, the whole kingdom was waiting for Ram to be crowned king. It was the greatest thing that could happen to the kingdom. It was the greatest day of Dasarath's life. And his co-wife says, you banish him to the forest. And what did he do? I mean, you know, if there's any reason to have an excuse not to keep your word, that was a pretty good reason, wasn't it? I mean, look at it politically, strategically. From all points of view, you could reason, say, well, I won't keep my word here because there's too much at stake. But what did he think? He said, I gave my word, I must do it. And it was so difficult for him to do it that shortly after Ram left, he died out of separation. So it was not an easy thing, but he did it. He kept his word. Now, could you imagine how difficult it was for him to call Ram in and tell him, my dear Ram, You're exiled to the forest for 12 years. And because Ram was an obedient son, then what did he say? What did he say? Yes, Father, whatever you say, I agree to it. He didn't argue. He didn't lament. He accepted it. And then what happened is oftentimes, well, I don't know how often, but when Ram was in the forest, he was approached on different occasions by his brother and others to come back to the kingdom. And what did he say? They said, we need you. Please come back. Give up this life in the forest, this exile. You don't have to do it. It's not necessary. We need you. And you know what he said? Anybody know? Anybody out there know? Should I tell you again? You probably could guess what he said when they asked him, go back. Go back to Ayodhya, your home. We need you there. He said, I can't. Why? I gave my promise. Right? He said, no, I won't go back. I gave my promise. So, you know, you could say he had a good reason to go back. His father had a good reason not to exile him, but no. I gave my word. I gave my promise. I cannot go back. Amazing. How much integrity the Kshatriyas had. How it was like, you could say it was like a principle as dear to them as life to honor their word. So, we have another story. You know the story of Vamana. Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva was an incarnation of Krishna. And Vamanadeva was actually a dwarf. Interesting. Krishna incarnated as a dwarf. Like a midget. And he had blonde hair. I don't know if he had blue eyes, but he had blonde hair. Interesting, isn't it? So anyway, he was a Brahmin. And in that culture, Brahmins lived by begging. In our culture, beggars are looked down upon. In that culture, beggars were honored. It was a form of renunciation. And obviously, to beg, you have to have some degree of humility. And you have to depend on Krishna. So it was a way of life in which you would live humbly by depending on Krishna. And naturally, as a beggar, you generally would not accumulate much wealth. So he lived that way as a Brahmin, and he came to the kingdom of Bali. And so Bali said, as is the duty of the king, what would you like, O Brahmin? Because it's the duty of the kings to offer charity to the Brahmins. And what did Bali say? I want how many steps of land? Yes, I want some land, but I only want 3 steps of land. And Bali was thinking, you know, I'm the king. Why don't you ask for more than 3 steps of land? And Vamanadeva said, no, 3 steps is sufficient. At that time, Bali's spiritual master, Sukracharya, understood that Vamanadeva was an incarnation. And with those 3 steps of land, he was going to take everything away. And that means Sukracharya would be out of a job, because once Bali loses his kingdom, then he doesn't need a guru. So, what did Sukracharya say? He said, Bali Maharaj, don't do it. He's going to take everything. And then what did Bali do? What did Bali say? I'll read a verse from the Bhagavatam, because I have it here. So this is what Sukracharya actually told Vamana. You do not know what a dangerous position you have accepted by promising to give him land. I do not think this promise is good for you. It will bring great harm to the demons. So he made a promise. Now Sukracharya is saying, that's a bad promise. You shouldn't keep it. And so Sukracharya is saying, you know, if you keep this promise, we're all going to go to hell. You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise. And I think that because of this inability, what is this verse? He said, so yeah, he's saying, you're not going to be able to keep your promise. And if you don't keep your promise, you're going to go to hell. I don't understand. You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise, and I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. In other words, Sukracharya is saying, don't make the... He's going to offer him the three steps of land, and then Sukracharya is saying, don't make the promise, because you won't be able to fulfill it, and then you go to hell. I don't know the exact context, but anyway, we know the way the story went is that Bali kept to his promise. He said, it's my duty to offer the Brahmins, and I've given my word, same thing. Now, we have a story. Here Krishna tells Arjuna that he made a promise to kill Ashwatthama. Personality of Godhead said, and Arjuna had made a promise to kill Ashwatthama, but then there was some controversy about whether to kill him. And Krishna said, you know, because Draupadi didn't want Ashwatthama to be killed, because she felt sorry for Ashwatthama's mother. And she didn't want his mother, she didn't want Ashwatthama's mother to lament like she was lamenting for losing her sons. So Arjuna had already made a vow to kill him, so now he's bewildered what to do. And Krishna told him, he said, you promised, and you have to do it. I'll read the verse. The personality of God had said, a friend of a Brahmin is not to be killed, but if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. So Ashwatthama was considered a friend of a Brahmin, maybe not qualified to be a Brahmin, but born in a Brahmin family. All these rulings are there in the scriptures, and you have to do things accordingly. You have also to fulfill your promise, what you have had made, the promise you made to your dear wife, as well as to have to, as well as to do things for the satisfaction of Bhima as well as mine. So, here Krishna made an arrangement that Ashwatthama would be punished in a way that he would be humiliated, such that humiliation would be considered like a kind of sort of death, or as bad as death. So, but the point is, Krishna's saying, you made your promise, you have to keep it, you can't wiggle your way out. It's interesting, isn't it? In all these stories, how once a promise is made, everybody is duty-bound to follow it. They understand that. That's duty. Okay. Now, we have another story. I mean, look, these stories are amazing because they have so many good reasons not to follow their vows, not to follow their promises. They have these incredibly good reasons. So you want to hear, we're all familiar with another story, and this is probably the best reason. I mean, these are the best reasons not to follow your vow. Vasudev is the wife of Devaki, the mother of Krishna. And as the story goes, Kamsa heard a rumor that the eighth child of your sister would kill you. When he heard that, what did he do? You know the story. When he heard that, he was driving his sister home and brother-in-law from the wedding. He heard a voice in the sky that said, Kamsa, you fool, don't you know the eighth son of your sister is going to kill you? Wow, could you imagine driving your sister home from her wedding and hearing a voice in the sky tell you that? And could you imagine hearing that and simultaneously being this incredibly demoniac person? And as demoniac as he was, what did he do? He whipped out his sword and was prepared right there on the spot on the wedding day of his sister to kill her. Nice guy, huh? So, Vasudev was expert at diplomacy. And he said, this is really bad karma if you do this, Kamsa. This is not right. It doesn't befit you. The whole thing's a bad idea. Don't worry. I will give you every child we have. I'll give you the child. You can do whatever you want with the child. So, That's what he did. Each child, and then what would Kamsa do? He'd kill the children. Then once in a while he would hand them back and say, no, it's the eighth child. And then his demon friends would say, but you don't know. You should. So they'd take the kids back and kill them. I think that's the way the story goes. You can correct me if I'm wrong. My feeble memory. But, so, what did Vasudev do? He said, each time he would give the child, knowing that this rascal, demoniac, horrible king is going to kill the babies. So that's a pretty good excuse not to keep your word. What do you think? To protect your family, I kept his word. That was the principle. Anyway, there's a history behind that, that those children of Devaki had to take birth. It was all divine arrangement. Anyway, you could say he had some good reasons not to keep his word. Okay, we have another story. I hope you like stories out there. Unfortunately, I'm not a great storyteller. I'm not like Radhanaswami. He's an expert storyteller. But maybe I can get more animated and act this out. It's hard to do that sitting in a chair. But let's see what we can do. This is called Ekalavya. Ekalavya kept his promise. Now, story of Ekalavya is interesting. Ekalavya, if I remember correctly, was not a kshatriya, was not a warrior. But he wanted to be taught archery by Drona, and Drona refused. So what he did was he created a murti, a deity of Drona, out of clay or something, or mud. And then he actually learned archery through that deity. And then Drona was around and he saw some archer doing something. And he followed the trail. And said, who are you and who's your guru? And he said, you're my guru. I said, but I told you I wouldn't be your guru. And he told him the story. And then he said, well, you have to give dakshin. He said, yes, Guru Maharaj, whatever you want. He said, give me your right thumb. Because you can't, I don't know how to do the bow, but you need the right thumb to be an archer. And if you cut off your right thumb, then everything he learned was finished. But because he told his guru, whatever you ask for, I'll give you, then cut off his right thumb. That was the principle. So, he was happy to do it. Okay, do you like that story? I thought that's a nice story. I mean, not nice that he cut off his thumb. You might think that was not a nice thing for Dronacharya to ask him, but anyway, I think they were both satisfied. Okay, I'm going to read something. On his side, Duryodhana both tried to keep Vikarna and to win over the Pandava's uncle, Shalya. Duryodhana was the enemy of the Pandavas. So he's trying to build up his army, and he wanted Vikarna and the Pandava's uncle, Shalya. Karna needed a fit charioteer, and Shalya was both an acclaimed charioteer and a Maharathi warrior. As Shalya and his army traveled the long distance to join the Pandavas' side in the battle, they found pleasant accommodations that Duryodhana had arranged for them along the way. Duryodhana's clever ministers encouraged the tired Shalya to make full use of the facilities. They took such good care of him that Shalya said, Yudhisthira must have arranged these accommodations. And then he said that he thought Yudhisthira had arranged him, so he just said this, whoever's arranged this for me, I'll do whatever he wants. Duryodhana then appeared and said, Duryodhana. Duryodhana means a bad fighter. Not a bad fighter that he didn't know how to fight, but a bad person who fights. who fights for the wrong reason. It was I who made... So Duryodhana said, it was I who made these arrangements, and I want you to fight on my side. Wow. Tricked him. Shaya kept his word, fought for Duryodhana, and eventually became the final Kaurava commander-in-chief. Amazing, isn't it? The codes of the Kshatriyas. I mean, that's a good reason not to keep your word. You know, well, I just said that. I didn't really mean it. Whoever... Of course, I wasn't thinking of you, Duryodhana, in part of the whoever. And now he's the Pandava's uncle, and now he has to fight against him to keep his word. It's amazing how bad things have become today when we say things and, you know, we make promises and we don't even mean it. And when we don't mean it, we don't even remember we said it. Okay, now we're going to read a quality of Krishna in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There are descriptions of the qualities of Krishna. And one of the qualities is Krishna is truthful. And we'll read what is written there. So I think it'll be interesting. A person whose word of honor is never broken is called truthful. Krishna once promised Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, that he would bring her 5 sons back from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. After the battle was finished, when all the Pandavas had come home, Kunti praised Krishna because his promise was so nicely fulfilled. She said, such a nice verse. Listen to this verse. It's so nice. This is what Kunti said. Even the sunshine may one day become cool and the moonshine one day become hot, but still your promise will not fail. Isn't that nice? Just like you find in Bhagavad Gita, in many places, satyam te, Krishna says, I promised this, I promise you this. He says something, and then to emphasize, like if you say something, you want to emphasize it, what do you say? I promise this. Just understand, this is going to happen. So, now, could you imagine Krishna says, I promise this, and then you do it, and then Krishna doesn't fulfill his promise. How would you feel? Think, even God doesn't fulfill his promise. What's this world coming to? No. He is the absolute truth, the most truthful. So Krishna promises to protect his surrendered devotees. He will always keep his promise. That's Krishna. I'm going to read that verse again. Kunti says, even the sunshine may one day become cool, and the moonshine one day may become hot, but still, your promise will not fail. In other words, no matter what happens, Krishna's promise is always good. Similarly, when Krishna, along with Bhima and Arjuna, went to challenge Jarasandha, he plainly told Jarasandha that he was the eternal Krishna, present along with the 2 of the Pandavas. The story is that both Krishna and the Pandavas, in this case Bhima and Arjuna, were Kshatriya warrior kings. Jarasandha was also a Kshatriya. I think that they were not dressed as Kshatriyas at that point, Krishna and Bhima, and was very charitable towards the Brahmins. Thus Krishna, who had planned to fight with Jarasandha, went to him with Bhima and Arjuna in the dress of Brahmanas. Jarasandha, being very charitable towards the Brahmanas, asked them what they wanted, and they expressed their desire to fight with him. Then Krishna, dressed as a Brahmin, declared himself to be the same Krishna who was the king's eternal enemy. So Krishna was truthful. One who cannot control senses cannot be trusted. Ah! Have you ever heard that? One who cannot control his senses cannot be trusted. So if you want to be trustworthy, you have to be self-disciplined. Right? Say what you mean and mean what you say. When Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician Chanaka Pandit said, "Never put your trust." I won't read this. It's too controversial. In other words, don't put your trust in those who can't control themselves. Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. So, we want to be trustworthy to our God brothers and God sisters. We want to be trustworthy to people in general. We want to be trustworthy to Guru. We want to be trustworthy to Krishna. And so, taking a vow means to be trustworthy. Now, it would be, I would hate, and I think we would all hate to have an experience in which some exalted person who we dedicated ourselves to, our lives to, like our spiritual master, told us, "I don't know if I can trust you." That would be devastating, wouldn't it? What to speak of Krishna told us, "I don't know if I can trust you. You know, you said you were going to do so many things and you didn't do them. You said you were going to chant every day. You said you were going to follow principles. But you didn't do that. I don't know if I can trust you." So we want to be trustworthy as bhaktas, as devotees of Krishna. We want to be trustworthy as disciples of our spiritual master. And so being trustworthy means that what we commit to, we follow through on. And then that trustworthiness gradually can become a habit. And then you can see in these stories that that honor, it was a form of, you could see there was self-honor there, that they were honoring themselves by honoring their word. Because if you don't honor your word, in a sense you degrade yourself. So they're all saying in these stories, "I've given my word." And that's it. Once you give your word, then you must do it. That's, you know, even you may slip up and say the wrong thing. And someone says, "You said that." Then in these situations, the Chatri would say, "Well, he wouldn't say I didn't mean it." So he may have said it by accident, not thinking. But if he said it, he would do it. So that's a powerful position. And that is a position that we all are striving to be. And so, does anyone have any questions before we continue on this journey? Because I have another story, but I don't know the whole story. So I might have to tell it today and tell it tomorrow also. But I see a question. What is the verse? "One who cannot control his senses cannot be trusted." I don't know if that's a verse or if Prabhupada said that. I have it here in my paper, but I don't have it in parenthesis. I don't have it as a quote. It may be from my personal memory that I remember Prabhupada saying that somewhere. No. That is the quote from, I'm sorry, that is a quote from Chanaka Pandit. It's a verse. Chanaka Pandit was a Brahmin, and he composed many verses, and this is one verse. "You cannot trust those who cannot control their senses." That's called Chanaka Shlokas. That's where that verse is from. So, anybody out there think of another story? What book? That's the book. I don't know. If the book is available, Chanaka Shlokas. Chanaka, what's it called? Chanaka, I don't know if it's Chanaka Shlokas. Let's see. You can Google Chanakya. Chanakya Pandit. C-A-N-A Chanakya. How is it spelled? C-A-N-A-K-Y-A. I mean, you can, on the Veda base, which has all of Prabhupada's books and lectures, you'll see many of those shlokas there. So, okay. Anyway, we're Googling right now. We're finding many shlokas. So, now, as I mentioned, yeah, Chanaka Pandit. Thank you, Bikram. As I mentioned, I was thinking, oh yeah, I had mentioned there's another story. So I'm going to tell part of this story because I don't know it all. There are two sages, Vaishishta and Vishramrita, and they're having a discussion. And Vaishishta and Vishramrita said, there are people in this world who will keep their word of honor under any condition. And Vaishishta said, that's not true, because if the conditions get really bad, where great suffering would come upon that person, or even death would come upon that person, then they would break their word. He said, nobody would keep their word in particularly difficult situations like I'm describing. So Vishwamitra said, no, it's not true. There is a person, and I can show you. His name is Harshchandra. He's a king. And he'll keep his word under any situation. So Vaishishta said, you have to show me, because I won't believe it. He said, yeah, I'll show you. So anyway, what happened was Vishwamitra created this situation in which he, by his mystic power, created some voices of women saying, save me, save me, while Vishwamitra was hunting in the forest. So he ran to save those women, and in doing so, Kashyapa had put himself out there, and Kashyapa was meditating, and he ran by him, and then I think he ran back because he had neglected him and paid obeisances and said, I'm sorry that I've neglected you. Please forgive me. Whatever you want, I'll give it to you. You know the story? You heard it? You know, anything you want, I'll give it to you. So Vaishishta said, okay, give me your kingdom. He said, your kingdom? He said, my kingdom is yours. And then Vaishishta said, okay, tomorrow you have to move out of the kingdom. You have to leave. And all you can take is clothes on your back. Harshchandra said, whatever you say. And then he said, all your wealth, everything, it's mine. You have nothing. You have to go. And then Vaishishta said, you know, once I loaned you money to do a Rajasuya or some sacrifice. He said, yeah. He said, you have to pay me back. So Harshchandra said, well, give me some time. Give me a month or so to pay you back, because I have no money now. So then he just lived by begging, because he had nothing. And then the day that he had to pay back the money, Vishwamitra appeared and said, you know, you owe me the money today. Are you going to pay it back? He said, oh, you're right. I didn't realize that. He said, give me the day. So he went out. He didn't know what to do. So he figured that he would have to sell himself and his family to pay. So he actually sold his wife as a servant to a Brahmin. And the Brahmin said, I'll just take your wife. I don't want your son. And she said, you have to take him. I can't be separated. I'll train him as a servant. So he paid him a little money for the son also. And then Vishwamitra came and he paid him. And Vishwamitra said, that's only half the money. He said, you're right. Give me till the end of the day. And then he didn't know what to do. So he said, he put himself up for auction. He said, someone buy me. I'll become your servant. And this man who ran a crematorium, who looked like a monster, came and said, you can be my servant. And Harshchandra, he just couldn't bring himself to do that. So when Vishwamitra came to collect the money, he said, Vishwamitra, I don't have the money, I'll just be your servant. I'll just be your servant. I just can't be, I can't do this. But all along, when Vishwamitra was asking him for the money, when he would appear, Vishwamitra would say, you know, you don't have to pay the money back. I'll absolve you from that. And there'll be no sinful reaction. He said, no, no, I made the promise. I must do it. So every time, you know, he's giving his wife away, when they're leaving the kingdom, and then he's giving his wife away, and then he's selling himself, Vishwamitra appeared and said, I'll absolve you from the debt. You don't have to pay. And every time Harshchandra would say, no, 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 I have to pay. I promised you I have to pay. So anyway, Vishwamitra said, okay, I'll accept you as my servant. He said, thank you. And he took him as a servant, and that mortician was there. And what did he do? He sold Harshchandra to the mortician. He said, now I got my money. And then he became the servant of the mortician. The story goes on, and we're going to continue next week. But as you could see, what's going on here is that Harshchandra is keeping his word. So, now, what do you have to say out there in KC land? Yeah, so Hari Boldas says, even though I'm really not the person to be trusted, but when someone doesn't put trust on me, it's devastating. How to deal with it? Yeah, if somebody is unwilling to trust you, it could be, that's a good question. You know, how do we deal with people who don't trust us? I think there's two things. One, we have to, maybe we've done something that makes them doubt that they can trust us, so we have to become more trustworthy, build their trust. Sometimes it takes time to build trust. Or it simply may be that the person doesn't trust anybody. Excuse me. So they may not trust you, even if you are trustworthy. But I think, you know, in a sense, it's good that you do feel devastated if people don't trust you. And you want to show them that you are trustworthy. You are a person to be trusted. That's what it means to be a friend. You know, we have to, you know, you have to see if it's actually you who's done something that would cause them to not trust you, or it is their nature to not trust people because of some experience they've had with someone else. Like, if they've had a bad experience with somebody else, they may not trust you, even though they had no bad experience with you. So that's also a possibility. Okay, Vikram says, all those stories happened in previous yugas and people were more pious then. And Kali was not hitting them hard than what we were facing now. Yes, that's true. But what that means is we have to try harder. It's Kali Yuga. The stories are inspirational. They set examples. They said, this is like, you know, this is a real man. And it's interesting because, you know, most if not all the stories we get in Shastra, they're all thousands of years old. So nothing's really, you know, everything was different when those stories. When we read those stories, there are times when things were different. But the principles are there. And if it's more difficult now, all that means is you have to try harder. You have to be more conscientious. You know, that's Prabhupada's approach. You know, try harder. If it's difficult, try harder. Otherwise, then we can use Kali Yuga as the excuse. Well, I'm not trustworthy because it's Kali Yuga, but it's not true that everyone in Kali Yuga is not trustworthy. So, you know, if everybody wasn't trustworthy, then you could use that excuse and say, no one in Kali Yuga is trustworthy, not even the devotees. But you can't say that because it's not true. So you can't use that as an excuse, but you can use it as a motivating factor to try harder. Right? I think Carol says, I heard that a man who had always been a thief came to the temple with the intention of eventually stealing Prabhupada's watch. Seen a picture of Prabhupada with a watch while in jail and developed a desire for it. One day, he got the chance to go to Srila Prabhupada. He walked in. Srila Prabhupada asked what he wanted. The man said he wanted the watch. Prabhupada took it off, handed it to him. Then the man did not want it anymore. That's a nice story. I'm not sure I've heard that story. Don't remember hearing that story, but so Street Straw is back in action. So okay. I think, Vikram, your point is really good, because we may have an intention to be trustworthy, we may have an intention to keep our word, but circumstances may make it difficult to follow 100% of the time. Now, you could say these stories of people of bygone ages, they were so strong, they were so self-disciplined, that if they gave their word, that was it. That was like Bhishma, like we told the story last week. Bhishma said, I will never marry. His name wasn't Bhishma then. And then from the sky, the demigod said, Bhishma, solid, very steady, solid. So, these people were so powerful, so self-controlled, so disciplined, and they could say, I will be celibate, and their whole life could remain celibate. And there were women that wanted to marry. After he took that vow, there were women who wanted to marry him. And there were reasons, good reasons for him to marry, but he never did. So we take inspiration from that. And as I was saying in the beginning of this class, I wanted to discuss how we deal with the reality that sometimes we may not keep a vow. We may just not be that strong. How do we deal with it? It's a good topic. Because it's a reality we have to deal with. But first, we get a comment from Radhe. In the Mahabharata, it almost seems like truthfulness means more than morality, like in the case of the Kurus, Kauravas exposing Draupadi, and because the Pandavas gave their word, they did not do anything to stop the humiliation. Please explain. It's like you're saying, it's true. It's beyond morality. It's dharma. It's the dharma. It's the essence. It's one of the essences of Kshatriya life, to keep your word. So that is the code of ethics amongst Kshatriyas. Like Kshatriyas have code of ethics. There are certain standards they follow in battle. And so, apparently, from what we're reading and what we're seeing, that the life of a Kshatriya, that their dharma, one of their aspects of dharma, is to be truthful. It's not like a choice. It's not like, well, I'm going to tell a lie now because it will be advantageous. They're always truthful. So, okay. Does that answer your question, Rate? When keeping a vow hurts you or someone else or something, why would it be preferable to keep it? Because that was the ethics of the Kshatriyas. Now, in our situation, maybe it's different. You have to weigh all factors. There's this story. There's a Brahmin, right? And a Brahmin, truthfulness. It's a Brahmin, tell the truth even to your enemy. So there were some robbers or thieves or murderers chasing some people, and the people ran into the Brahmin's house and said, "Can we stay here to be protected from these people?" The Brahmin said, "Yes." So the thieves came and said, is there anybody in the house? So naturally you would say no, or these criminals, because you want to protect them. But the Brahmin, being honest, said, oh yes, there are people in there. And then the people, and the, those criminals went in and killed them. So as far as I understand the story, the Brahmin had to take the karma for the killing of those people by that honesty. So it is true, sometimes we have to show discretion. And, you know, it's the duty of a Brahmin to protect people. And he could have protected by not being truthful. But, of course, that's different than keeping a vow. It seems to be a different category, perhaps. But keeping a vow hurts you or someone else or something. Why would it be preferable to keep it? May not be. But it depends what we're talking about. It may also hurt you not to keep it. Depends what it is. What would be your solution for me? I want to keep promise to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. Maya attacks me so much at work, and I get influenced by it for a moment. When I get back home, I get back to my senses, but still it's so hard because of my conditioning. Very nice question. I wrote an article about how to be Krishna conscious at work, so you should read that article. www.tstrain.com/newsletters. And you'll see that when you go on there, you'll see that you can just go on to tstrain.com and then you'll see it says newsletters. And then there's an article called Making the Workplace by Kunta, something like that. We're going to get the, go to newsletters. He's going to get the actual URL. Is that it? Turning Your Workplace into Vaikuntha. Something like that. You read that article, it'll really help you a lot. There it is. Transforming Your Workplace into the Spiritual World, issue number 16. And he's going to post that right now. My incarnation. I've expanded myself. So my expansion is doing it. There's an article. Okay, so read that article. It will help you be Krishna conscious at work. And I also want to address some other aspects of your question. Maya attacks me so much at work. Okay. That means there's a, let's say at work, let's envision work like a contaminated area where there's disease, like your, say, a doctor and you're working in a hospital, you're a nurse, and there's a lot of disease around the hospital. So you have to protect yourself from that disease. You have to at least try as best you can to have a strong immune system, because you don't want to work in a hospital with a weak immune system, because you'll pick up all the diseases, right? So if your work, if there's a lot of disease in your work, then you have to be stronger when you go there. Sounds like your work is wearing you down. It almost sounds like you feel kind of helpless. So I would say you really have to increase the quality of your rounds, because that will give you a tremendous amount of insulation. And I think you need to prepare before you go to work to fix your consciousness and go in with a vision of being Krishna conscious. Now, before you get there, and don't go in with the assumption that you can't be Krishna conscious there. And that's what my whole article was about. Because when you make that assumption that you can't be, then when you go, you kind of give in to the environment. You don't see how you can deal with it. So go in with the assumption that you can be at least better off than you are now while you're there. But I would say it really starts at home. It really does start at home. Building your strength at home before you go there. And then being conscious of the pitfalls and being very much prepared to deal with them before you go. But read that article, let me know what you think, and then we can talk more next week. Okay, we're not supposed to hurt ourselves or others, but our concept, this is Bhakti and Carol saying, we're not supposed to hurt ourselves or others. What it might mean to hurt ourselves or to hurt others may it has to take into context what is not only just materially what may hurt or benefit, but also spiritually. So there could be situations in which we don't fully understand. Like, we may think we're hurting ourselves, but we're not. Or vice versa. We may think we're helping ourselves, and we're hurting ourselves. But, you know, I don't know the particular situation you're discussing, how keeping a vow, you know, what is it, what vow is it that you're keeping that would hurt you or somebody else? Okay. So, I was telling you last week in relation to Vikram's question that as a young devotee, I would be very Krishna conscious in the temple, and I'd go outside the temple, and it was like a vacuum cleaner for my Krishna consciousness. It was like, I'd go outside, and it was like a vacuum cleaner was in my heart, and just like, all the Krishna consciousness I got that morning in the temple was vacuumed out. That's what I felt like. I felt so weak, so tender, so young in Krishna consciousness that to deal with the material world was like walking into a big vacuum that just sucked it all out. What I think that means for us, not what I think, I know what that means for us, is we have to try harder. Because if we were not raised from the very beginning to be devotees, and if we were not practicing Krishna consciousness seriously from an early age, it's not deeply embedded within us. And then when we get into environments which are not conducive, it's easy to get influenced by those environments. So it really means when we're in that situation, just the thought needs to be there. Well, I have to try harder. Because if that thought is not there, then what's the other thought? Oh, this is overwhelming. I can't deal with it. And then what do? We give in to it. Have any of you ever experienced that? You're in a situation or you're in a state of consciousness in combined with a particular situation and you just go, I can't deal with it. This is too much. That's it. And kind of we just surrender to the inevitable the inevitability of the downfall created by those circumstances. So we don't want to do that. You know, it's very good to think when situations are difficult to think, okay, now I have to brace myself. Just like in battle, you know. The more difficult the battle is, the more the soldiers have to be prepared. So, you know, we're in battle also. Aren't we? Aren't we all battling Maya at every moment? So we're in battle, so you have to prepare more for the battle. When the battle gets difficult, you have to be more prepared. Right? Surrender to the inevitable. No, that's what I wrote about in that article. It was just obvious that many, many devotees, when they're not in situations which are conducive for following Krishna consciousness or conducive to following their vows, they just say, well, I can't because of the situation. That, you know, that's not the way to deal with it. You should never say, I can't because of the situation. You just should say and acknowledge this situation is difficult and I have to approach it with a different strategy than I would approach a situation, you know, other situations which are not as difficult to deal with. That's the way to be Krishna conscious, living in this world. That's the way we have to approach this world. Otherwise, it's so easy just to say, I can't do it, it's too difficult. Look at this environment. I just have to give in to it. No. You don't have to give in to it. You really don't. I promise you, you don't have to. And there are ways to deal with it, but you have to discover those ways. And Krishna will help you discover those ways, and you can pray to him, and he'll give you the intelligence. He likes to give his devotees intelligence. Dadamhi bhuti yogam tam yedamam upayanti te. I will give you the intelligence. Sometimes Prabhupada said, he would often say, if you're sincere, Krishna will guide you. Or he would say, I can see you are sincere because Krishna is guiding you. Common, he would say that. Or he would say, pray to Krishna for strength. Pray to Krishna for guidance. So, in difficulties, what should we do? Pray to Krishna. First thing, Krishna, please help me in this situation. This is a difficult situation. Help me. Krishna, please give me intelligence how to deal with this. How can I see the situation differently? How can I relate to it from a more Krishna conscious point of view? You'll be amazed. You will be amazed if you pray that way, what Krishna can do. He can change the way you see things. You know, he can change the way you see things so you see things in a way that helps you instead of hurts you. Because really, what you're describing is we're seeing things in a way that's hurting us, it's bringing us down. Could see the same thing in a way that could bring you up. Right? Does that make sense? You're looking at, we're all looking at the same thing. And one devotee's looking at it and he's falling into Maya head first. And another devotee's looking at it and he's running away from Maya feet first. Right? But they're both looking at the same thing. It's just looking at it in a different way. Okay. Krishna says in the Gita, Janma Mitu Jara Vyadi, inevitable. Yes. So, you see those things, but you know everybody's seeing those things. That's birth, death, old age, and disease. You know, Krishna says that, but how do we see that? And how do we deal with that? You know, usually the way we deal with it is we block it out. So, you know, you could say everybody's not really seeing it. Even though it's there, they're not seeing it, not acknowledging it, not dealing with it. You know, a wonderful, wonderful statement by Prabhupada. He describes bhakti, haituki apatiyata yatma supersedati. There's often this haituki, this word haituki means causeless. And sometimes the way Prabhupada describes causeless is also, it's not dependent on anything. Krishna conscious, you can be Krishna, you know, in the sense of you can be Krishna conscious anywhere. So that's a good thought to bring with us. You can be Krishna conscious anywhere. And another thought, I don't know if I mentioned this previously, this is a really nice thought. You're always associating with another devotee. Wherever you go, you're always associating with a devotee because you're with yourself and you're a devotee. So now what kind of devotee are you? What kind of devotee do you give yourself the association of? Isn't that an interesting thought? You're always associating with a devotee, yourself. So if you become a better devotee, you get better association. So that's kind of an impetus to become a better devotee, isn't it? You can get better association wherever you go. Easy way to get better association wherever you go, become a better devotee. Simple, right? So, the situation, it's not, everybody doesn't react to the situation in the same way. So Prabhupada's making the point, don't think it's a situation. Yeah, okay, what's an example of a bad situation? How about being born as the son of an atheist? That's not really conducive to being Krishna conscious, is it? Let's say in your next life, you took birth as a son of an atheist. Not a good position, right? But maybe you had some remembrance of your past life. You go, my last life I was a devotee. Now this life I'm born as son of an atheist. Not only that, he's sending me to schools which teach atheism. And not only that, my father is the king. And I'm the prince. And he's training me in diplomacy. And it's founded and grounded in materialistic principles and atheistic principles. And you remember that you're a devotee in your last life. And you're thinking, Oh no, this is not conducive to my bhakti. Right? And then you tell your father, you know, father, this atheistic business, it's a bunch of BS. And your father is such a demon, he says, I'm going to kill you for saying that. Not a conducive situation. Prahlad Maharaj was in that situation, and as he was being sentenced to death in various ways by his wonderful, loving father, he was completely Krishna conscious. Somehow or other, he was completely Krishna conscious in the most unlikely situation. Of course, you could say if you were being killed, you'd be thinking of Krishna also. But the point is, he was always Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada uses that example to say it does not depend on material situation. There's another example Prabhupada uses. Krishnadas was a servant of Mahaprabhu, and they were traveling together, and Krishnadas, what's his name? What's it? Krishnadas something. I forget. Who knows? Krishnadas something. What was his name? Something Krishnadas? Maybe another name in front of it. Anyway, he got diverted by the gypsies. I guess some beautiful women allured him. And Lord Chaitanya had to go and rescue him from the hands of the gypsies. So could you imagine? You're traveling with Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya himself, as his personal servant. Kala Krishnadas, that was his name, right? Kala Krishnadas. You're traveling with Mahaprabhu. What could be more ideal than that? Talk about ideal. You're the personal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his most merciful incarnation of Lord Chaitanya. Is there any better place to be in the universe than that? And still, Kala Krishnadas fell into Maya. Wow, that's amazing. He was with Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and he fell into Maya. And Prahlad was with no devotees, being trained to be an atheist, and he was completely Krishna conscious. So these stories can inspire us to what? To realize we don't have to throw the towel in when the situation is not to our liking, but we just have to deal with it. That's all. So, okay, Hiranyakashipu, yeah. He was the original child, what's the word? What do they call it? I forget. I'm half awake here. Somebody wake me up and give me the answer. Not child molester, there's another one. Well, you could call him child molester. Yeah. So, okay, then we could say, well, Prabhu, I'm not Prahlad Maharaj. That is true, neither am I. But the example is there, and Prabhupada refers to it often. Child abuser, that's it. Thank you, Bhakti and Kira. The Adi, the original child abuser, at least the original one I know about. And Prahlad Maharaj did not take his father to court for child abuse. Rather, he took him to the court of Lord Nisringadeva and asked that he be forgiven. So, Prahlad Maharaj is a great devotee. But anyway, this is such a good point because, you know, you make a vow, and then you get into a situation, and it's difficult to follow the vow. And then you just think, well, it's the situation. So my whole point here is don't blame, try not to blame it on the situation, and if the situation is not conducive, just work harder within that situation. And then, also, I would say, try to put yourself in more conducive situations as far as possible. Get more sangha, association of devotees, and create a more ideal environment in your life where you work, whatever you can do. You know, really, when you really think about it, you could say that there's no ideal environment Because even in an ideal environment, as Kala Krishna Das showed, you can forget Krishna. I mean, you know, in a sense, there is an ideal environment. Ideal environment is wake up early, worship Krishna, chant the holy name, read like that. So, you know, and create an environment which supports that. So, yes, that is ideal. But even in that environment, you can be in big Maya. It's happened before and it will happen in the future. You can be sitting at the feet of the Guru and be miles and miles away in your mind. And you can be miles and miles away from the Guru physically and be sitting right at his feet in your mind. So, I mean, look at Srila Prabhupada, look what he did. Amazing, right? He came alone. That is truly amazing. And what did Prabhupada say? He said, I never felt that I was ever separated from my spiritual master. I always felt he was there seeing my activities. So, now if we could feel that Prabhupada was always with us, watching us, wouldn't that be wonderful? Yes, Prabhupada said, I never felt alone. Yes, Krishna was with him. But particularly, he said that he always felt that his spiritual master was with him. Of course, we accept Krishna was with him, yes. But we can think and we can feel that Prabhupada is with us, our spiritual master is with us, Krishna is with us. So that's a good environment, right? This one wealthy man came to Mother Teresa and said, how can I help you? She said, I don't need any help. He said, but I want to do something. Can I give you some money? She said, I don't need money. He said, but can I do something? She said, yes. Tell everyone. Their best friend is with them always. That was her request of him. God is with you always. Tell everybody that. Your best friend is with you. So that's an ideal environment. In that sense, we're always in an ideal environment. Mother Teresa. So, we overstayed our welcome. It's 9:15. And I just want to let you know, in case it's cold where you are, don't be envious of us here in Alachua. It's going to be 20 degrees tonight. Say 20 degrees in Florida? Yes. We're in North Florida. Not 20 degrees in Miami, but up here. So, if you're suffering where you are, we're suffering with you. We're doing it all for Krishna, right? Yes, tell everyone their best friend is. Yeah, we're having Himalaya weather here. We can, if you're really austere, you can go outside tonight and fill up a pond full of water and go in the water and do meditation. But not recommended for this age. So we can go inside a nice warm house and eat some nice prasadam and chant Hare Krishna. Okay. So, yes, paraduka duki. We feel unhappy to see the unhappiness of others, but misery loves company. So if you're cold, you can. You don't have to be envious of us here in Alachua because we're cold with you. And we will see you next week. And next week, we're going to talk about how to deal with failure. If you take your vows and you fail, what to do, how to deal with it. And thank you. And we look forward to seeing you next week, and Hare Krishna.